Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast.
For this episode of the podcast, I sat down to talk with Carson Leung. He and I originally met on top of the Yellow Mountain in China, and then we caught up about a month later in his current home in Hong Kong. We went out on a busy Saturday night and sat in a park, and before going out for a night on the town, we talked about all things travel. Carson has lived in a lot of places. He knows Eastern Asia and Southeast Asia quite well. He also grew up in London. So we talk about those places and a few other places, and he's working on a new line of clothing potentially for travelers. And he's got a lot of other projects going on. He's a really interesting guy, full of a lot of knowledge about the world and insights. So without further ado, let's get right to it and listen to my conversation with Carson Leung.
I'm here today with Carson Leung.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on, Carson. Today we went hiking a little bit. We went up to Victoria Peak and hiked around basically the highest point of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Did a little bit of maybe semi-legal hiking around...
The urban fence hiking.
Yeah, around fence hiking around a radio tower at the very, very tip of Hong Kong where it was completely obscured by fog and it was a bit dodgy. We're kind of lucky to come out without any injuries,
yeah.
But that's the kind of thing I like to do. And we're getting ready to go out for a night on the town, I guess. But before we went out, we were going to have a little talk about travel.
Yes.
So how you doing tonight, Carson?
Yeah, good. You know, so we met in Beijing when I was traveling. And, you know, met in Huangshan and met Dan. And we were talking about, you know, climbing the Great Wall.
Yeah.
And, you introduced me in this section in Zhengzhou to Mutianyuan Park, which... We did, it was basically the highlight of my trip. Yeah, so
awesome! I'm really glad you enjoyed it. That was definitely my favorite part of the wall.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, probably we had a few death experiences as well.
Near death experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for you, if you've never been to like Beijing or the Great Wall, there's certain sections that are close to Beijing that are like fully restored. Like there's one called Badaling.
Yeah, Badaling.
And it's totally fake and I mean rebuilt within the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And there's souvenir stands all over and it's easy to get to. It's safe. It's that's where probably more people go than anywhere else. Then there's others that are kind of in the middle that are like Mutianyu is kind of restored, but not as many tourists go there. Mm-hmm. And then there's other parts of the wall that are just completely left alone that are, you know, 1,000 years old. And the wall is slowly falling apart.
Yeah. And when you're actually in that part of the section, you know, it's actually quite a authentic experience, you know, I say, you know, walking through, you know, it's part of history and actually... You know, I kept thinking to myself, how the hell did they build this? You know,
yeah,
like it's unbelievable actually climbing through that section of that wall.
Absolutely, engineering marvel.
Yeah.
It's not like flat on the ground.
No,
it's like it goes up the side of hills at sharp angles.
Yeah, several hills actually. Up and down. It's just an amazing, a piece of architect actually in China. Actually being quite close to that, it's a very good experience, and I highly recommend everyone to actually do that section as well.
Yeah, there's a saying in China, I think it's been attributed to Mao, but maybe it's older, that you're basically not a real man until you've been to the Great Wall.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, in Chinese, I think it's Bu Dao Cheng Cheng Fei Hao Han.
Okay, yeah.
And it's I really like that expression.
Sure, yeah.
It's... Yeah,
I think, and that's true. You know, I think you know, you certainly reach a new sense or a new height of achievement, or like in this sense, like a new manhood, you know, that you've just completed, or like almost like conquering this part, you know, like it really felt like this, you know, conquering this part section of this war, and you know, yeah, you feel pretty good after doing that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned conquering. You can almost like picture the Mongols coming
in,
like
trying to get past this thing. But yeah, no way. I mean, it's such a, you know, I think looking at the war, you know, it's actually, you know, it's not that high, you know, in my own opinion. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I first got there, you know, I pictured it a bit higher.
But the war itself.
The war itself. Uh-huh. But then, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, actually, it's actually, you don't need to be that high, you know, because just the pure scale of the terrain that the Mongolia had to go through itself.
It's foreboding terrain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just to get to the wall from, like, the roads, you've got to walk for a good hour, usually.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it's not an easy hike up to it.
No.
And then along it is...
Yeah.
Really difficult at times.
Yeah.
And it was snowing, wasn't it? Like when you were there?
Yeah, it was. Well, I think it definitely snowed the night before or something, because, there was. The snow had settled, so there was quite a thick snow. Like, and you could see the footstep, and you know, the journey there, there's the driver was kind enough to drove us to the spot. And he kept on basically suggesting kindly that we don't do that section because of the situation where the snow and stuff. And then when we arrived at the entrance, the woman stopped selling us the tickets. And, you know, I got out, I couldn't understand her clearly. So, you know, I thought that she was denying our entry. But in fact, she didn't want to sell us the ticket because it was too dangerous and she didn't want us to be, you know, anything happened to me protecting us.
But you made it okay.
Made it all in one piece. As I said before, it was like the best highlight of the trip, of actually experiencing like an authentic part of the Great War and part of history.
That is awesome, and it's kind of weird to think that just a couple weeks ago I was in Beijing, and where I live right now, where it was, you know, freezing and snow on the ground, and it's winter, and I've been doing this trip south through China overland, mainly on trains. It's been awesome. It's been an amazing trip the last couple weeks, and now I've ended up in Hong Kong, where it's, you know, tropical, and it's I'm sitting here in a short sleeve shirt. At night, and I'm actually a little sweaty right now from walking around.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's cool the transitions you can experience even when going over land.
Yeah, I mean, the seasonal change as well, you know, it's quite interesting. In Hong Kong, you get slightly, maybe less than four season, but then in China, like, I think we experience four season, you know, in that month alone. Because we went from... you know, the south part of China, which is the Guilin area, which is more similar to Hong Kong, more tropical. And then we went up north, which got, you know, colder. And then we went to the west side first. And then
To Gansu province.
To Gansu. And, yeah, that was great. That was
the Gobi Desert.
Yeah, the Gobi Desert. Yeah, I mean, and then to Beijing, which is snowing. So, yeah, we had like the four seasonal change in that month.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I guess you could do this in the States pretty easily too. You go from Maine down to Miami, let's say. Kind of be like going from Beijing to Hong Kong.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But it's I really like traveling over land.
Yeah,
as opposed to flying, just so you can experience these gradual changes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the train journey we calculated that we spent 10 days in total. In public transport, so in trains, and actually, I think that's quite an important part actually of traveling, and for backpackers and all that, because you actually get the opportunity to see something different from, you know, let's say flying by plane, and it's a much slower process of actually, you know, enjoying the whole scenery as well. And actually, when we one of the train journey from Lanzhou to Dongguan, like, was basically one of the most scenic part of train journey, because it went from the more kind of there's like rock formation to just the mountains covering with snow and just pure white. Going through that transitional phase in the train, you know, it's very, very good experience. Yeah, very,
it's totally awesome. And the trains, you can walk around, you got plenty of space.
Yeah, yeah.
You can watch the scenery going by. It's just fantastic. I love them.
Yeah.
And China, the trains are the way to go in China too.
Yeah.
Great network here.
Yeah, yeah. The network, the infrastructure of China in terms of transport, we actually crossed the border from Luo, which is the end of Hong Kong, so you can actually go there through MTR. So the whole process of going into China is very convenient.
Oh, okay. So you just take the subway to the end, to the northernmost point, and then you just walk across in Shenzhen?
Yeah, exactly. And then from there you can either take the public transport or the train. And, it's a very good infrastructure for that. And the train itself, it was, you know, very, in my point of view, very comfortable, actually, you know, with the sleepers. And,
yeah. Oh, I agree, for sure. Well, okay, so you mentioned Hong Kong, and I mentioned at the top that we're in Hong Kong now, and there's kind of a lot of noises going on in the background, like people shouting and planes going over.
Yeah.
This, I've just found this, like, anywhere I am in Asia, it's just, it's really loud. It's, anywhere where there's a few people.
Yeah.
But I kind of like it a lot. It's really intoxicating.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy. That's
so
sure.
much.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a really fast-paced city.
Yeah.
People walk fast here. It's bright. Three in the morning, last night, there were, like, a lot of people out and about.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I mean, it's interesting, you know, with, I think, Hong Kong people is, you know, or Asians, like, we love to, you know, kind of go out and hang out and actually, you know, have dinner outside and socialize in that sense, you know. Like shopping, for example, was, you know, like there's a lot of shopping malls. And so there's always people moving and constantly going to shops, into retail section, to shopping or to enjoy the food. You know, a pastime of Chinese people is they, you know, sometimes if they don't know what to do, they go and eat, you know. It's
why not? You got to do it anyway.
Yeah,
right?
It's like, hey, like, let's go for an afternoon tea. I mean, and then afternoon tea, you know, I think we have maybe like five normal meals, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And then there's a meal called Xiu Ye, which everyone knows. It's like the meal that you take after dinner, you know.
Oh, so, it's like Taco Bell did this, their fourth meal.
Also, yeah,
like,
something. So exactly. So after dinner, you go out, you know, maybe have some drinks, and then you go, you know, you go back and eat. You know, people are, you know, after you hang out, you're like, oh, what should we do? Let's go for some meals, you know. Why not?
Yeah, some more food.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very, you know, the eating culture has been, I think, very deeply, you know, integrated into our culture, you know.
Oh, the food. I mean, that's one of my favorite parts of China, is all the food and that variety. It's so good here. It's nothing at all like these crappy Chinese buffets you get in the States.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That stuff's garbage.
Yeah. In London, you have a lot of, pay £5 all you can eat. And you're like, okay, you get what you pay for, I guess.
Are you from Hong Kong originally?
No, so I was born in Macau.
Macau?
Actually, yeah, Macau, which is an hour away from Hong Kong. And they were Portuguese colonized until the 1999. So I was born in Macau, but I grew up in London, so in England.
Hence the accent.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, with my accent. Most of the people that I travel with, they they get a sense that, you know, I've got that kind of British accent, but then, you know, sometimes some words that I say, you know, they're like, are you, like, you've got some type of, like, South African, especially when you say yes, because I say yeah, you know, it's like all the time.
Ah,
I think
okay.
It's because my best mate, Carl Koch, you know, he's South African, and, you know, I've been hanging around him, you know. Yeah, all my life, you know, in London, and, you know, he's always like, yeah, bro, hey, how's it, eh? You know, so maybe I catch, you pick up some of that.
Yeah.
Grew up in London, in the east. I was based in London, in the east part of London, so in Clapton. A lot of creatives there, so a lot of kind of warehouses, and a lot of creatives. Basically based there, so there's a really strong community in that part of London, and it's great, you know, people get to network well there, and, you know, it's where people you know, if you want to get a project and you want to start a new project, that's where, you know, you would kind of meet the right people to kind of kickstart the conversation in that sense.
Okay, so you're kind of always around artistic types.
So my background is product design. So I'm a product designer, I've been working in London for the past 4 years in consultancy, and then after that, I decided to go freelance. So I started freelancing, doing kind of mostly consultancy work. So anything from branding to graphics to products, to a bit of photography as well. So, and that gave me a lot of flexibility to then kind of do my own things, to do my own projects. And that's the kind of one very good advantage of being a freelance, is that freedom, you know, like every freelance designer you just speak to, and they'd be like, yeah, you get so much more freedom than to actually express your work in other areas, or to do your own projects and so on. So yeah, and from there I went traveling. So after, you know, quitting my job and became a freelance designer, I saved up a bit of money and went traveling for 7 months in Southeast Asia.
Awesome. So yeah. Which country did you go to?
So started off in Vietnam. So we did a motorbike journey from the south, Ho Chi Minh, to north, Hanoi. And then we went to Laos, Thailand, Myanmar, and then to the Philippines and Indonesia.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing places, yeah.
Awesome trip. You skipped Cambodia, though?
Oh, yes, Cambodia, of course.
Sorry. Oh, you did that, too.
So, from Laos, Cambodia, then to Thailand. A lot of good places, and you meet so many good people. I mean, like, that's the one thing I love about traveling is, you know, you just meet so many cool people, and, you know, you learn about so much about, you know, the geography, the culture, and just, yeah, like, good to have friends all over the world, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's kind of why I started this podcast, right? That's kind of the inspiration for it. I kept meeting a lot of really interesting people and having awesome conversations and just seeing where it goes always. And I just thought, well, I really need to record this stuff. I've had so many awesome connections that I haven't gotten any kind of recording.
Yeah.
And then I started looking up podcasts, you know, travel podcasts, and there aren't really a lot of them. So I thought, why not?
And you know, I think you get to really have a very diverse kind of range of people talking about, you know, what they do in life, and it's really nice to, you know, hear these stories. You know, it's really nice to kind of listen to podcasts like these where, you know, you can go through, and it's almost like you get to kind of have a conversation, you know, like you get to know a bit more about, you know, different travelers that you haven't met before. But, you know, at the same time, it's it's almost like when we met in Beijing, you know, like we like the all the conversations that we had, like, we always said, oh, I wish, you know, we actually record this, so, you know, we can actually share all these different stories and different thoughts for other people to hear, you know.
It's so awesome. Yeah, well, we're recording now, so
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Finally, yeah, we managed to find the time.
Yeah, we met what, about a month ago.
Yeah,
and on top of this mountain, the Yellow Mountain.
Huangshan. Yeah,
and it wasn't that great of an experience for me, at least, because it was just raining for 2 days straight.
Yeah,
I didn't see a damn thing.
Yeah.
I was there with my mom, too. She was visiting me in China, and I kind of felt bad that I dragged her all the way to the top of this mountain.
Yeah, I mean, she did well, like, for, you know, she's carrying a backpack and actually hiking up the stairs.
Absolutely.
I mean, with the average days of, like, 245 days of foggy days, with the highest of being 285 per year.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
I should have researched that a little more.
Hey, man, I didn't even know that until we saw one of the signs and we were reading it, and we're like, okay, fine. Like,
I know, these kind of places, if you search, like, on the internet, photos of the Yellow Mountain in China, you're just going to find the most beautiful photos,
right?
Exactly,
you're
not going to find the crappy, foggy pictures where you don't see anything. Yeah. And that's what I found, and so I just kind of thought that's what it looks like. But I'll tell you, I learned my lesson. I just recently went to Zhengjiajie, which is, sometimes they call it the Avatar Mountain, where supposedly James Cameron got some of his inspiration to create the Hallelujah Mountain in the movie, movie Avatar. And I knew that that kind of had a similar weather pattern by this point. And I kind of knew, like, well, I better plan this out better. So I went up to the top of the mountain for 4 days.
Yeah.
And two of the days were spectacular, just beautiful. And one was a little foggy. One was snowing, which was also cool, but we couldn't really see much.
Mm-hmm.
But I've learned that in China, some of these landscapes, you just need to take your time and not be in a rush.
I mean, I couldn't have said it any better, you know, actually taking your time. I think that's the key, actually, of visiting some of, you know, these amazing places, and actually taking your time instead of, you know, rushing it. And
anywhere you go, really.
Yeah, anywhere you go,
It's never enough time. You never have enough time, but,
you never
still, you can, you definitely don't need to be moving every day. Running around to see everything and then missing it all.
Yeah.
Well, how about we talk about Vietnam? You mentioned that you did a motorcycle trip.
Ho Chi Minh
or Saigon to
Hanoi.
To Hanoi.
Yeah.
And is this a pretty normal thing to do in Vietnam, to rent a motorbike, or did you buy one?
Yes. So So that's the kind of, a lot of backpackers do it. And the usual thing is they actually buy a motorbike and then resell it
at
the other location. So you would, let's say if you start from Ho Chi Minh, you would buy a bike like a Honda Win. That's all that's the majority of the bikes you buy.
That's the standard one.
That's the standard one. It's a Honda Win, but all the parts is not Honda. So the reason being is everyone can fix it, like, can fix the bike, which is good. If your bike breaks down or anything, you can just go to, you know, like a random shop or a restaurant the restaurant or like a, you know, like a full place, and, you know, a kid will just come in and, you know, like, fixes it, you know, just like that, you know. Like, everyone is a mechanic in Vietnam.
Okay.
And because there's a lot of people who do this route from, you know, traveling from motorbike either from Hanoi to Ho Chi Minh or the other way around. And I think the reason being is just, you see a country so much better. You get to kind of, you know, go on some detour. You're on your own time. You can, you know, go into villages and kind of, just seeing kind of smaller side of Vietnam, basically.
Yeah, that's got a lot of appeal to me too. Going to little villages instead of just the big cities.
Exactly.
Maybe getting away from the masses of tourists, because Vietnam is really touristy. It's right on, you know, right on the backpacker's radar, right up there with Thailand, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, like the best fall that I've ever had was like accidental, you know?
Like a pho soup.
So pho is the traditional Vietnamese noodle soup. It's like a type of rice noodle in normally like a nice clear broth and with just like a nice like slices of like really nice tender beef, and you mix it with different herbs basil, like mint, and some lemongrass, and yeah, it's just a really nice like hearty meal to have. We stopped off randomly to get petrol and we were hungry and we saw this full place in the middle of nowhere and we went inside and yeah, had the best floor ever. Like it's I wish I kind of like, you know, took a photo of that place, because that place need more kind of like notices. I mean, yeah,
that's funny because like, or it's interesting because my favorite pho was also in a little tiny like village.
Right,
we were talking earlier today about Hoi An, mm-hmm, and Da Nang.
Yep.
And right in between those two is a place called Marble Mountain.
Okay.
And around there, there's a couple tiny villages and like some few houses here and there. And my girlfriend and I stopped at a place.
Okay.
And just random place where they didn't speak a word of English. Obviously, we don't speak Vietnamese. And we just got the soup that they were making, you know, the giant, mm-hmm, kettle of soup that they were giving everyone.
Yeah.
And it was so good. I couldn't believe how good it was. No. And we wanted another bowl. And, you know, this soup costs like $1 for a bowl. Like, so we said, yeah, let's get another bowl. This is like the best soup, best bowl we've ever had.
And that's the bit. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I'll just finish it up quick. I tried. I went up there with money. Mm-hmm. And said, here, you know, can I try to indicate I want another bowl?
Okay.
And the lady was like, No, like, you've already paid. I'm not taking your money. Get out of here. I won't take more money from you. I'm like, no, please. I kept, like, rubbing my stomach. I'm like, yeah, it was so good. I don't know how to indicate. I want another bowl. And then once she figured out what I wanted and that I didn't want to, like, pay her a tip or something, she just gave, like, the biggest, like, belly laugh. Like, ah, ha, ha, ha. Like, look at these foreigners that eat twice as much as us, and it's crazy. And, they had a good laugh at it, so did we, but we got that second bowl eventually. After a lot of persistence.
I mean, that's the thing, you know, when you're traveling in that sense, to actually make the effort of, you know, going off the beaten path, as they say it, or, you know, go a bit off route and just, you know, just get lost and explore and, you know, have no plans and just go and, you know, explore a bit, you end up finding like these kind of really memorable places, actually.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't even have to go far sometimes.
No.
Hoi An is full of tourists.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably 50-50, like foreigners versus locals.
Yeah.
We rented bikes and rode them, bicycles, I mean, and rode them, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And we're in the middle of like rice paddies and there's people, you know, working in fields. And we got the feeling, at least from some of these villages we were going through and the stairs we were getting, they don't see a lot of foreigners, and we're talking a couple of miles from like backpacker central. So it's not even all that hard.
You don't need to go far. I mean, just go out and kind of explore a bit and I think you definitely find something that would be a bit different than the norm, you know. So the motorbike you'd normally buy the motorbike for around $300, and then you can sell it back. I sold mine for $250. So
you didn't lose much.
So the whole trip was $50 plus petrol, and petrol isn't cheap either. So it's a great way of transport and actually seeing Vietnam. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
What is this, one of those like 100cc bikes?
They say it's 100cc, but I reckon it's about 90.
It's even less. Can barely get it up to speed on the highway.
They're just fun, just riding around, very nippy, and
well, that's cool.
I think you know, you hear a lot about, you know, like cops stopping you and all that, but we didn't have any trouble.
Oh, like actually. getting bribes and stuff.
Bribes and all that, but we never really had any problem with that.
No worries.
So, yeah, no worries. Just get a bike and just ride, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I think that's a, it's a common enough thing for people to do that, I mean, this is just my thought behind it, like, even if a cop did pull over one or two people here and there, it's like they can't get all of you, right? And like, they're still only going to get like a tiny fraction.
Yeah.
And what, is it like illegal or something to ride these things, or is it okay?
I think the license parts, you know.
The licensing.
The licensing. But I mean, no one checks it, and as long as I think the more important part is actually, you know, being like safe for others, you know, as long as you actually is confident and safe on the road, then, you know, fair play, just have fun, you know, but you know, don't go like all gun blazing, you know, and cause a little bit of, you know, accident or something like that, you know. But
I guess like, right, and most of Vietnam is probably laid back enough that most like Americans or, you know, Westerners would be okay doing it, but I mean, places like Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City are just so crazy. Yeah. I can't even imagine going in there.
I mean,
and motorbiking.
Yeah, I mean, it's like organized chaos. So, you know, the classic. I remember first going there, didn't know what to expect. Saw people crossing the, you know, zebra crossing line, and you know, no car stops. So
The crosswalk.
Yeah, the crosswalk. So the way to do it is you actually just have to take the step, and the car will stop. The cars won't stop until you actually cross the road. So that's the trick. You just have to be confident and cross the road, and then the car will stop.
Yeah.
And then you hope they normally.
You hope so.
Yeah, they normally cross. And in that sense, they in the kind of the way that the traffic goes and. Like the way they ride a motorbike, if they see, you know, a foreigner, normally they ride around you, and you know,
they'll assume you don't know what the hell you're
exactly,
doing.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's almost like you're more safe. You know, like
kind of just got this halo around you.
Exactly.
Because you're a foreigner.
Yeah.
And I think the key though, when you're crossing these streets, is don't stop. Don't do anything like unexpected.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
just put your mind to it. Just go. Don't like stop and then
don't try to go back. Right?
Don't turn around and, you know, say to your friend, "Hey, come on!" Like just go.
It's a totally different system, and a lot of people you know, complain about it when they first come to Asia, and I did too, and I don't know what the accident statistics are, and I've seen quite a few like minor accidents in China, especially. But but I'm getting more used to it over time. And
I mean, it's almost like it's almost like if they have like a, you know, if someone takes a driving license, right? That's how they would be taught. You know, that's they would have. The infrastructure or how people drive, you know, they will, you know, they're not gonna, the driving instructor, I don't think, would tell the driver to like, you know, stop or anything. They just, you know, Vietnam style, you know, they would get taught Vietnam style.
Yeah, that's how they learn, right?
Yeah, that's how they learn, I mean, or something. I don't know, I'm joking, but probably that's how they roll, you know.
Like, yeah, it's just how it is. I mean, but that being said, I you know, I was working my way south through China, and I got to the last city before Macau, just north of Macau. What is it called? Zhuxiang, I think. Zhuhai.
Zhuhai. Yeah, Zhuhai. Yeah.
That's what it is. Zhuhai.
Yeah.
And it's just north of Macau, and all of a sudden I started walking along the sidewalk, and like, the cars were stopping at red lights for when they were turning right, you know. And normally in China, man, there's not, let alone stopping, there's no slowing down. If you're turning right on red, you just go right through.
Yeah, they accelerate and they go.
Oh God, you would expect the people going through the green light to just look out for you. Basically, that's how they do it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the cars were stopping at red lights. And then I saw a bus stop at a crosswalk and let people cross. And then, you know, then I came to Macau, and it got a little bit more organized. Yeah. And now I'm in Hong Kong, and it's just weird. It's like there's actual spots where there are lights just for crosswalks, and the cars actually obey them.
Yeah, they actually follow the rules.
It's so much more organized here.
Yeah.
It's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of a relief to be somewhere like here for now. But at the same time, I almost miss like the more chaotic places too. It kind of,
you feel more kind of like in that sense, kind of like less restricted, you know.
Where you just do whatever you want.
Yeah, you do whatever you want. Yeah, you don't really think about it.
Yeah, and here I'm starting to think about, well, there might be some rules here that I should be following when I'm walking. Like like last summer I was in Germany, in Berlin.
Oh yeah.
And where like obviously Germany is central.
If you cross the road when there's the red light, as in like the pedestrian red light.
Yeah.
And there's a family across or someone, they will give you the eye, you know, because, you know, that whole culture of like, you know, there's a kid, don't show them, you know, that this is bad. Yeah, like this sense of crossing the road when the light is red, you know, it's bad. And I remember when I was in Germany with my girlfriend, and she's German, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I just crossed the road because there's no cars and, you know, I got too used to, you know, the Asian style. So I just kind of crossed the road, and then, you know, Katerina just said, like, oh my God, you had no idea what you just done. I still, like, I just like committed like a...
It's like you killed a little kid
or
something.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, whoa, chill.
Yeah. Oh, man, I remember I was in Munich for first time in Germany a while ago. I was in Munich and just walking, and I didn't even know I was in the bike lane. There's just like different colored bricks on some of the sidewalks, you know.
Man, you're getting through hell of trouble.
Oh, this dude just like reamed me out in German. I didn't even know what he was saying, but I knew it was bad.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not like, it's not like there's a bicycle painted on the sidewalk or anything. It's like the bricks just change color, and that's how you know it's the bike lane.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I don't even know. This is my first day here. Look at the backpack. You know, you gotta yell at me like that.
Exactly.
Contrast that with like, you know, China or Hong Kong or you know, Vietnam or any of these places where you just run for your life essentially.
Exactly. you get a lot fitter after the Asia because you're, you know, on a fast pace all the time.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that, we were hiking today, and Hong Kong's really hilly.
Yeah, especially in central. Yeah, it's you go up and down. Yeah,
sure. It's really a stunning location, though. There's the forests growing along the hills.
Yeah.
Actually, my couchsurfing host, who is not here right now, he was telling me that they've reclaimed a ton of land, like where he lives in Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. And there's this flat area where that was the ocean, like not so long ago, and they just ran out of land, so they built more land.
Oh yes,
yeah,
yeah. So they're building, land. They're expanding land by filling up the ocean. Yeah, but I mean, interesting. Going back to the point of like, you know, I mean, in Hong Kong there's a lot of land actually. It's just how condensed it is. I mean, getting actually outside Hong Kong, at the more Kowloon New Territory area, there are so many hiking spots and so many land actually. But then most people, you know, it's more concentrated within like Hong Kong area. So
Hong Kong City.
Hong Kong City, especially in central this neighborhood basically. So that's why they're building, you know, they're expanding land even though they have, you know, enough. But people wouldn't really, you know, I mean there's a bunch of, you know, problems with, you know, getting to work and, you know, it's all about conveniency, you know, how convenient you can get to one place and the other.
Oh, sure. A lot of these are like little islands where there's land and no bridges. Yeah, I guess before, well, until just recently, I had only ever really looked at Hong Kong in the context of a map of China.
Yeah.
And when you see a map of China and then you see Hong Kong, it's like this little tiny dot. Yeah. It's like looking at Rhode Island or something, you know, on a map of the U.S.
Yeah.
And it just looks tiny. And I guess I just always assumed it was only the city and that's all there is. But actually, it's fairly substantial in size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm kind of delighted to hear that there's so much wilderness and hiking that you can do around here. It's really a nice thing for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think the old governor, like, his passion was hiking. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, back when it's like, yeah, maybe just after the English, you know, colonized. Like, the governor, like, his passion was hiking. That's why he built all these kind of infrastructure for hiking, and that's why most of the trails are very, very well maintained, you know, very well marked and so on. So
yeah, absolutely they are.
Yeah, and also like the vegetation as well, like, I mean, talking about, you know, Hong Kong being, you know, we talked about how there's like plants growing everywhere and it's actually very dense, the vegetation. I mean,
yeah,
the condition actually has got a really big potential. And, you know, coming back, you know, from like London and, you know, kind of to Europe, coming back to, you know, people always assume Hong Kong as like a city-centric place, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
With like buildings and architecture and so on.
Yeah, but you just look at the pictures and see all the skyscrapers.
Exactly, yeah, skyscrapers. Yeah. But I mean, Hong Kong, the more I've been back, the more, you know, you get to discover like all these places, you know, that outside of Hong Kong. And, you know, it's about, well, you know, I talk about outside and it's like half an hour away, you know, by transport, like half an hour to an hour away, and you get to, you know, experience like really nice mountains
and
all that as well. Yeah, it's you get, you know, the beach as well, like some nice beaches around New Territory, Halong Bay.
Halong Bay?
Oh no, sorry, no. Oh. Ham Tin Wan, sorry, Ham Tin Wan and
okay.
Dai Long Wan. Yeah, sorry. And Dai Long Wan means literal translation is Big Wave Bay. So that's where all the surfers go.
Oh, okay. There's surfing here too.
Yeah, exactly. Ah, cool. So there's people there's actually surfing in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And yeah, like very surprised, like, to actually know that these kind of culture exists as well, these kind of subculture of like sports and all that, like, it's
yeah, this is all surprising to me too.
Yeah,
so you lived you grew up, are you from Macau, grew up in mainly London?
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been back or in Hong Kong?
So I went traveling for 7 months, and after that I was in kind of, yeah, Europe for a bit, and then so I came back here probably three, four months now. Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Oh, okay. So yeah. not a super long time.
No, not at all.
What mainly made you come back here?
So I came back here mainly because, you know, like, after traveling, that kind of course, when you travel, you have a lot of time to think.
And
kind of like, you know, different ideas and all that, and just comparing with my lifestyle, comparing to what I want to do, and in terms of kind of the projects that I want to do, London is just let's say like Hong Kong is just a better place to kind of for startups, in terms of kind of the resources as well and all that. So yeah, the main reason why I came back was because I wanted to start my own business. A project that I'm doing right now with a friend of mine in New Zealand. We are planning to start a sort of lifestyle inspired brand, you can say. So it's a lifestyle kind of product-based concept inspired by kind of traveling and the outdoors and hiking. So, for example, like products would be kind of clothing inspired by, you know, not like sportswear, but a cross between kind of like a casual wear, but with kind of hiking elements inspired by that, you know. So maybe the material would be a bit different, but when you look at it, so the idea came from the fact that, you know, hiking, my passion is hiking and kind of going to walks and stuff and
yeah,
kind of outdoor activities. But most of the kind of when you go into like a hiking store or something, most of the product is very kind of sports based. It's very gear based, performance based, and I think I just want to kind of break into that and kind of introduce a more lifestyle based. So I'm trying to promote the sense of hiking doesn't have to be like a more sports related, like performance based activity. It can be, you know, like going with your family or like going with your friends, and like, you know, you don't have to dress like a full on gear, like very sports gear. It can be just, you know, a very nice, comfortable, you know, t-shirt, but maybe the material is like made from, you know, like a maybe mixed nylon and cotton mix, which got like a wicking properties that, you know, doesn't soak in sweat, you know. But it doesn't have to scream like, oh, I'm wearing like a whole sports gear kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I've seen a fair amount of people here out hiking, out and about, and they're wearing like spandex.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So like some of the colors are straight out of the like late 80s, early 90s, like really bright, like neon type colors.
Yeah, yeah.
It is screaming like, look at me, look at me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's more like creating things that are subtly... kind of subtly like functional in the sense that it's got that kind of performance property, but it's not focused on that, you know.
Yeah, sure. That could really do well for travelers too. I mean, when I travel, like right now I'm wearing a shirt that's pure synthetic, but it's just black. There's no like markings on it. And it's a little dressy. I can go out like this. Yeah. Same with my pants.
Yeah, I mean, there's some kind of ideas, you know, that we are developing right now, some products
okay.
and stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe the full concept, you know, I'll release it when the product is.
You don't have to give away any secrets, and I'm sure it's like way too early to really talk about it.
Yeah,
it's just cool to discuss what you're getting
into. The idea is kind of for travelers going to outdoors related and backpacking and these whole thing related. Putting all these kind of ideas into tangible products like clothing, storage, backpack, and accessories.
Awesome.
And Hong Kong is great for that because, or in Asia actually, because you just get things done so much quicker in Asia. I mean, in Sam Shui Po in Hong Kong, it's famous for fabrics, so you can go there and you can get like samples of like different performance fabric, like ripstops and, you know, canvas and all these type of material for free. Mm-hmm. And contact number, really nice selections, and you can do that like in a few hours. In London, in Europe, the same process. You have to first email the supplier. You have to wait for the email to bounce back. You have to explain, you know, your status, like, you know, what do you have a brand? Do you have a website? You have to pay for it sometimes, and then you have to wait a week maybe for them to send them to you. So, you know, just that process itself of searching something like that would take so much longer. So So in Hong Kong, it's great for that actually, for sourcing and all that. So mainly the reason why I came back here is, was because of this. And because, you know, the house prices in London is just ridiculous.
Oh, compared with Hong Kong?
Yeah.
I was walking through, walking today up to the Victoria Peak.
Yeah.
And we were looking at, there's a lot of real estate agents. They list, a normal thing is to show properties in their window and list kind of how much they cost. My God, I couldn't believe how expensive it was.
Yeah,
it's
true.
I guess since this was an old English colony, they still use square feet for housing standards. So I'm kind of used to the numbers. And just 1,000 square foot apartment was going for the equivalent of several million U.S. dollars. I mean, maybe this is maybe this is in a really nice neighborhood or something.
Yeah, that's like creme de la creme from property.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right now, I think, the living in Hong Kong, okay, I think we talked about this in the sense of there's the two extreme, right? You have the really pricey range of anything, eating, for example, or you can get a cup of coffee for the same price as getting a whole meal.
Yeah,
plus a coffee.
Right. We walked into a coffee shop and they didn't even list what coffee, the coffee wasn't even on the menu.
Yeah,
wait, guys, I just want a coffee here.
And you can get a whole meal plus a coffee in a local cafe, for the same price, and you might get a few dollar change.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, I just did that today, actually, before we met up. I got a whole large breakfast with a coffee for 29 Hong Kong dollars.
Yeah.
And then we walked into one coffee shop.
And that was half. That's
every cup
double.
Every cup was $35, $40. So it's amazing the differences.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, the whole kind of upper class and the lower class, it's very integrated, close together in central anyways, right? There's Starbucks, for example, in one corner, and then you have a local noodle place right next to it,
Sure.
So it's it's a very interesting culture-wise to experience, the more kind of old school kind of culture, and then you have the more kind of modern way of living.
So. Yeah, and I guess speaking of coffee, it's not really coffee culture traditionally, right?
No, yeah. No.
I mean, China, I don't know about Hong Kong, but China is just, for their tea, is just crazy. They have so many types of tea and really elaborate ways of preparing it and serving it. It's really cool to see the proper ceremony where they do the cleansing and there's a lot, there's many, many steps involved in making tea here.
Yeah.
But then coffee is just throw some instant, bullshit Nescafe in a cup. It's, 10 cups, 10 scoops of sugar to disguise it.
And yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Yeah, it's a different way of...
Yeah.
It's almost like... Yeah, the way, why are they... they look at us why do they love drinking coffee this way? It's a completely different culture.
But it's kind of strange though. Right around the corner in Vietnam, they've got a lot of good coffee.
Oh yeah, Vietnam,
all over.
I mean, Vietnam, Laos. I mean, they're famous for Laos is famous for coffee as well.
Yeah.
And I never knew that until I went traveling, and you get to see actually real coffee being made in Southeast Asian countries like that. It's amazing.
Sure. I mean, same with Colombia was awesome for me in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Those countries. Yeah. I mean, Colombia, you're just out on the beach, swimming, and someone's walking around with a thermos of coffee, and they're selling it for 10 cents a cup.
Yeah.
It is, a small cup, fair enough, but literally 10 cents is all you pay. It's just coming straight from the plantation to you.
It's the real deal. Yeah,
yeah, it's amazing in those coffee growing locations.
Oh.
But I have come to appreciate tea here, though, in China. I drink a lot of green tea and oolong tea.
Yeah,
so that's good stuff too.
I mean, they have a classic drink in Hong Kong, actually.
Yeah,
it's called the Yin Yuan, which is a mix between coffee and tea. So it's what you would order in like a classic Hong Kong canteen, where, yeah, if you ask for a Dong Yin Yuan, which is a cold mix of coffee and tea, it's
a mix of coffee and tea.
Yeah, together, and they put condensed milk in it, and yeah, it's nice. It's maybe we'll have a cup tomorrow.
we should definitely try that. I never even heard of this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like a traditional kind of drink, like Hong Kong canteen drink that you order.
Oh, cool. Well, we've got something to look forward to.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'm actually just going to be in Hong Kong for a couple more days. Then I'm going to go home for the holidays. I'll be in Chicago and then Madison, Wisconsin, where I consider to be my home. What are you up to in the near future?
So in near future, I mean, I have still got my traveling to be planned. So, you know, I would like to kind of balance, you know, my work with traveling at the same time. Meanwhile, you know, I would like to build upon the project that I'm working on, as well as kind of the more like landscape photography that, you know, I've been doing.
Awesome. I mean, we have actually the same camera. We both have the Canon 5D Mark III.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And I saw a few of your photos, like small version on the phone, but man, they looked fantastic.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
I think you have some really good skills.
Nice. Thanks, man. I mean, yeah, like just the views and everything, just capturing that, like, you know, it doesn't do it justice, you know?
It never does, right?
Yeah, but just actually documenting that, I think it's super important, you know, like using tools, you know, like a camera, and actually documenting your travels. I think it's, it's cool, you know, like, and I would like to, just keep on doing that.
Yeah, me too, absolutely. I mean, that's it's a huge part of what I do when I travel is photography and then obviously writing, and now, you know, some video here and there, and and the I've got the audio here with the podcast.
Yeah,
so I kind of like a mixture of a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a actually like a very good ecosystem. You know, you have with kind of you've got the visual side, and then you've got the listening side, and you've got the kind of like the speaking side, and kind of merging all those together. I think it's a great platform, man. You know, like checking out your website and actually having all those platform like in one place. I mean, it's great for, you know, travelers, backpackers, or someone who just would like to know more about, you know, different things, you know, like what's happening. It's that's cool.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, I'm always trying to, like, you know, get new ideas and mix them in and see what happens next. But if you need any help or advice, I know you're thinking, we were talking earlier tonight, you're thinking about putting together a website for a couple different things.
And
it could be great. I spend a lot of time on my website, but there's ways to do it that are a little cheaper.
We would definitely be in touch and just keep doing what we do, you know.
For sure. I mean, I plan to keep going with all of these mediums keep pushing myself to learn new things. I'm really loving it. Actually, I didn't even tell you, like, the last podcast that I recorded was all in Spanish. I hadn't even spoken Spanish really in like 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And I just met a couple people who's, you know, one was from Spain, one was from Chile, and they're awesome people, and they're obviously, their native language is Spanish. I thought, well, I could give this a shot, you know.
Nice.
Dust off the old cobwebs in my brain of the Spanish language. So maybe that's an interesting thought, is maybe, like, as a goal, try to do one in Chinese.
I was thinking that.
Maybe
our next podcast can be they'll kind of Mandarin mixed Cantonese mixed English. give it that fusion flavor.
I'm not sure about the Cantonese for me. That's a whole different ball game for me. But you've been studying Mandarin for a while, right?
But that was, you know, back in school. Studied, so maybe I had like a couple of years of education from that.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think I'll definitely do the mix and match. You know, the a bit of English and then a bit of Cantonese and a bit of Mandarin.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess
I don't know how that would turn up.
But. Yeah. Like, who's gonna listen?
Exactly.
To that? It's the problem. Like,
yeah.
The Spanish one was cool because then like a totally Spanish audience can hear it and they don't have to know any English.
Sure.
Right,
yeah.
To be able to know it. So yeah. It's a really good thought to do podcasts in different languages.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah,
I like the idea.
Nice.
Ah, it's something to think about for later.
Yeah. Well, I'll try and polish the old Mandarin. And
yeah. We'll try it again.
We'll try again. Yeah.
Maybe do a shorter one where we just don't have to talk as much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to do like, you know, some testing 50 takes before we.
Yeah. right.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely won't read a script or anything. You know. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
No. Well, we'll freestyle it.
Well, it'll. We won't cheat though. We'll read from a script, but it will all be written in Chinese characters.
Yeah.
It's and not the simplified, none of that stuff, like the old traditional characters.
I mean, and that's another thing that I love about these kind of podcasts. It's like, you know, we literally just like decided after some dumplings, like, oh, let's go for a talk. And,
yeah, man.
And
yeah.
Like, you know, like, and just did it. Like, you know, had no, just go out in different directions and. Yeah, it's very freestyle of like going to different areas and
I think it's versus photography where I'll spend like hours on one photo and just perfecting it.
Yeah,
I kind of like that too. So well, we're gonna wrap it up. We're gonna head out to a party in a little bit and see where the night takes us. And do you want to give the listeners any last minute advice about travel, about life, whatever?
Oh man, just. Actually, just don't plan much. Actually,
don't plan much.
Just go. Just go for it. Just being open to things and actually just try it, and then it will lead you to different places. Like just go from there. I mean, obviously, you have to plan it roughly, but don't plan too much, you know.
Don't overplan. That's key.
Don't overplan. Just have a rough idea and just go with it, and you know, and just let it take you wherever it goes, you know.
I love that
and
advice.
Just have fun. Yeah.
Yeah, and have fun. That is also key. Both of those.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. That's all for tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. Catch you next time. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.